brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Suds, suds, suds. It's time for more suds.
It is definitely time for more suds and mead today on this suds episode where everything good in life is worth discussing. This is Lay Brother Mike here. Joining me here at the table is Monk Jason.
Hello, everyone.
And Prior Shay.
Howdy.
So you're a Southern prior? Is that what it's going to be?
Southern
prior. Hey, how y'all doing out there in the back of the mead factory?
How y'all doing? God bless y'all.
Sip, Suds, and Smokes is sponsored by Craft Beer Kings. Craft Beer Kings, the home for all your beer, wine, and mead needs. They're also the home of the Mystery Box. You can check them out at www.craftbeerkings.com. Welcome to another riveting Masterpiece Mead Theater show, where you're going to be discussing yet another episode of poor fake British accents, cheeky pan flute music, and all things mead today. Our sud segments are all about beer, and today it's all about mead. Today's episode is going to be featuring three meads that we're going to get to talk about. But first, Shay gets the honors of going over our suds ratings for today.
We'll be tasting and discussing these beers, rating them with a suds rating, plus our signature belching sounds. That was not belching. And here are those ratings. Suds number one. This sucks. Give me anything but a bud.
Sounds like a belch.
Yeah.
At the wrong port.
I don't know where you've been hearing belching like that. Number two. Was that a belch? And it was. Number three, what a relief.
Which is generally what most people say around me. Ah, what a relief. He's leaving.
Number four, a body should really not make that sound. I love the Halo music. Number five, listen to that hang time, give me another. It really should be a golf clap.
What?
Really should be a golf clap.
A golf clap? Well, here's what Hank thinks.
I wish we could smell this radio show and those belch ratings.
Most definitely. Well, thank you very much for reading our suds ratings for today, Prior Shay. Today's episode of Masterpiece Mead Theater will feature several great meads, which we're going to get over in this really, really bad, thick British accent as I go over these meads that we're going to be discussing for today. We have three meads that we're going to go over. The first one is Miel de Garde from Bee Nectar, episode 13, also from Bee Nectar, and The Statement from Schramms are the three meads that we're going to go over in this episode today. Hey, if you would like to know all about mead, check out our Mead 101 show. It is available on our back catalog as well, and you'll find out all about meads in general. Now, I had some other discussion topics to talk about today, mainly mead ingredients. Now, these products feature such a wide range of ingredients, and when I tend to think about mead, I think about local, L-O-C-A-L, local. You know, with modern transportation, the ability to preserve fresh ingredients, I mean, do you think that that has influenced the quality of mead that's actually available to consumers today? Is it making it better or worse?
I think in some ways it really does help in terms of you know, a lot of things in this day and age, the farm to table, the local, the organic. That's helping with fruits, you know, getting high quality fruits to include in meads, spices and things of that nature. However, in one regard, I don't know that it really makes that big a difference. Honey is one of those, it's the original preservable food. It travels well. It does not spoil. Hmm. So the honey itself is, it travels well and is always, it's fresh. It retains its character for an extended period of time. So I think where that craft, organic nature of things comes into play is really with the added ingredients to the mead, the fruits and things of that nature that are common to use.
Shay, what do you think? Better or worse with the way that ingredients move around associated with meads?
Well, the great thing about local, you already have it's essentially just a great marketing strategy. You already have people who want farm to table. You already have people who want local, who, organic, local, free range. You know, these are these hot topics, hot words that people use in marketing. So if you have something from your hometown or something from your neck of the woods that people, that's an already marketing strategy that's there that, hey, this comes from down the street. Hey, this comes from one county over. It doesn't come from Northern California, Sacramento, where you have no idea what it looks like. You can actually go to the place, see it, taste it, feel it, touch it, be there. So a lot with the local farm to table not only lets you know what you're eating, lets you know what you're drinking, lets you know what you're consuming to your body, is that it's a huge plus. A lot of people like that concept about it, and if you have an established local market, you also can bring in stuff that is from California and say, hey, these are one-offs, or hey, this is the Rainier Cheerios we got from, Washington State, or whatever you're getting or whatever you're doing. So for me, local is always great. I always like to support those who are doing something great and being able to give back to community.
Well, that maybe that's a marketing spin that, some mead makers are kind of missing out on then, because is to really present that very much as a farm-to-table, local product as well. I agree with, what you're saying about, the transportation of at least, honey is a fairly, I still consider it a perishable product. It's very sensitive to temperature. But it still does transport, fairly well. And it doesn't require any, preservative element in order to retain, the measure of freshness with it. You can have honey that you've harvested and 4 days later, it's still going to taste the same. It's not like you have to go straight from the hive and straight to consuming it within a certain period of time. Where with some of the fruit that you would actually use in meads, I would think would probably have the opposite effect, which is you're looking at a time from harvest to ripening to actually working with it in a mash tun, right? You still work with a mash tun in when you make mead, or
generally not,
or a wine press?
No, generally not. A lot of times you'll use whole fruit, either macerated or something of that nature. You will use that straight into fermenters in some cases.
Oh, really?
Or you can do it straight into secondary. In other words, you can ferment that honey to a certain point and then rack it into a secondary vessel and add your fruit and components, additional components at that point.
Huh.
There's a number of different ways to do it. There are people that make mead without heating or boiling the honey product first. There are people who do. There's still some traditionalists who will boil the honey prior to putting in the fermenter. I tend to stick to the minimal heat or no heat side of things. I usually use just enough heat to help blend or mix my honey with the water or any other ingredients I'm adding prior to getting into the fermenter. But you can add that fruit. But you're right. There is we're talking windows of hours to a day or so of peak ripeness, freshness with that fruit. Actually, it's not a bad thing to freeze fruit sometimes when it comes to utilizing it in fermented products. the freezing process, freezing and thawing, breaks down those cell walls and actually helps that fruit release some of its flavor, some of its juice. So a lot of times I'll pick things at the peak of ripeness, and then I will, if it's something that calls for cleaning it up or processing it in some way, maybe slicing it, then I will freeze it and, you know, freeze it for a few days until I'm ready to get it into the fermenter. Like I said, it kind of helps release that flavor and that juice.
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed when I was growing up, my family had a huge cider farm. I mean, a very big cider farm. And we had a cider mill that was, you know, right there on the property. And that's one of the things that I really remember growing up was enjoying, you know, basically the fresh cider, you know, as well as some of the fermented products that came along, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months, you know, after the harvest was done. And they actually put up some of the cider and let it, you know, ferment naturally. And really great stuff. Quite amazing. So I think that, you know, that element of the fresh fruit, you know, for me is kind of stuck in my mind that that's really the path of making either really great cider or really great mead is having the elements of not just fresh fruit, but you're also paying attention to the elements of sugar or ripeness, you know, that's, you know, presented in the fruit itself. I mean, I know that you make a lot of mead as well, Jason. I mean, is that one of the tough tricks, is the timing to understand when you're getting ripe fruits to work with?
Yeah, definitely. Timing and nutrients for the yeast, the health of the yeast. Fermentation is a huge part of any of these products, be it beer, mead, cider, etc. So timing the temperature and nutrients, there's actually times when you need to add additional nutrients during different stages of fermentation of mead to keep that yeast happy and healthy, not kicking off harsh, high alcohol, fusel alcohol compounds or off flavors. So there's a lot of timing and again, attenuation in the yeast health. If you give that yeast too much sugar, you could very easily stress that yeast out. It will leave you with a product that's too sweet. It hasn't finished out. You don't have the dryness that you might have wanted out of it. I've ended up with products where I've ended up with far sweeter mead than I had intended. So I've had to make a dry mead and then blend those two to get a nice finished product.
Well, I've been a honey fanatic at times, and although I'm actually down to using like about 3 different types now, which is a good thing, honey is still a major component in mead. And I was curious how you think various honey varieties affect mead for things like fermentation cycles, or do they also do things like influence the taste, you know, of the mead itself? Shay, any thoughts you have around that?
Well, I mean, just like anything else, I mean, you get grass-fed beef, you get, you know, free-range chickens. Anything that's going to influence the end product itself is going to be, it's like, you know, from regular honey to clove honey to, you know, orange blossom honey, to which is one of the ones that we're going to be tasting today. But as a whole, anything that is going to affect the surrounding, or as we say, the terroir, or whatever is included in the honey, or whatever the bees consume, whatever the environment is. So yes, of course, it's going to affect the fermentation. It's going to affect your flavors. It's going to affect everything. You know, like we were talking about buckwheat honey. Buckwheat honey, you only use in a small dosage, because then obviously, and as we were saying, you can't take a whole bunch of it.
No,
like in, for me, when I make tea, I use clove honey. I use 100% clove honey when I make Earl Grey tea. Slice of lemon, it's fantastic. But, you know, I've used other types of honey, and you know, I've used lavender honey. I've used truffle, white truffle honey, and stuff like that. I mean, you obviously get different things for different honeys, but Jason may know more, a lot more than I do on that one.
Jason, any influence that variety of honeys have on mead from your perspective?
That's really almost the only influence on mead, besides the health of the yeast or the yeast you choose. The honey flavor, what what was in that honey, and like Shay mentioned, the what did those bees consume, and what did they use to make that honey? That carries through to the end in almost every case. There are subtle flavors, subtle compounds that can be stripped out during fermentation, where you don't get as much of it in the end product as you would have liked. And there are things you can do to help that. You can either back blend in some of that original honey to almost back sweeten a drier mead, and get some of your honey flavors and your characters back into the final product. But, you know, if you make a mead with 100% straight orange blossom honey, you will taste that orange blossom honey in the finished product. If you make it with Tupelo honey, you will taste the character of that Tupelo honey in the finished product. So it's 100% vital. I have had less than great honey and tried to make mead out of it just to, you know, as an experiment to see what I would get.
Yeah.
And the same, I had a batch of honey from a local beekeeper here that just had a harsh character. It was kind of I don't know, slightly burnt, acrid, I guess you would say, and just harsh, not very, didn't have a lot of depth or character, and the finished product was the same way. It just, I made a small batch just to experiment, and, you know, it tasted exactly the same as the honey did going in when it was finished fermenting, and so, yeah, I mean, it's just the key ingredient. It's the grape to the wine. It's the malt and the hops to the beer. It is the key flavor component.
Well, it's interesting that in each of the meads, you know, that we've gone through, that they actually don't declare the variety of honey, you know, that they've worked with. And I would think that would help, at least for the mead heads. You know, I don't know that would help the average consumer, but I would imagine that would. I mean, I love the analogy that you're playing off, you know, hit me rather quick, because you know what, if I don't know what grape is in that wine, it just pisses me off, you know, right off the bat. But that's because, you know, I am geared towards thinking about varietals, you know, of grape varietals, and I have a certain expectation for a certain grape varietal of what it should be like. And at times, you know, at least for wine, I struggle to let it go, especially with Italians, because Italian wines is just so heavily blended, you know. And there's some really great, you know, Italian varietals, don't get me wrong, but they really tend to blend a lot of things. And what they're going for is they're not trying to present the grape. They're trying to make great wine. And, you know, I struggle with it, you know, a lot of times tasting it blind, because I go, I have no idea what's in the glass, but it's good, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I think that, you know, at least for the meads that we've had, I don't know how you guys, that would probably drive me nuts. You know, if I really enjoyed mead, I'd want to know what kind of variety of honey's in it.
Well, I mean, it's really like, you know, go back to wine. That's where I first started was wine, is that the, you know, you delve so much into it, and, you know, like the Italians are notorious for it, unless it's governed by the body and you, you're drinking, you know, Barolo, where they have to do use 100% Nebbiolo, and they have to do this, they have to do that. It's just, you know, when you blind taste stuff, it's just like a painter who signs a picture. If you taste it enough and you've seen it and you can visualize it in your head, you know where it comes from and you can see where it comes from. You may not know the grape now, but you know what grows in that region and you know what's there. You know it's, it's Nebbiolo, Dolcetto, and things like that of nature. Yeah. And it's just like a, you know, artist signing a great painting.
Yeah.
And, you know, a question that I have in the mead part of it, I know mead as a historical point is that, and this is for you, Jason, as a historical factor, is that mead was something that transported very well. The Vikings had it on ships. The, you know, people who wanted something spirit-wise, in today's market, how long is the shelf life on today's market of mead. There's nobody out there, you know, beer has born-on dates, beer has freshness dates. You know, there's really no, in my, I mean, me as a novice, I don't know much about the how long it's going to last. And I don't know how many people out there know how long it's going to last.
I would say there would be two key factors. One is the percentage of alcohol and the bricks, the element of sugars, residual sugars that are probably left in it that would have some bearing on how long. And I'm thinking probably the sweeter, the shorter. So a drier ABV mead, I would think, would last a lot longer than a sweet, low ABV mead. But that's shooting from the cheap seats.
No, that's fairly spot on.
Oh, you're saying that my BS is actually accurate?
Yeah, I mean...
he is a lawyer, folks.
All right.
It's just like beer, you know. You're not going to age...
I'm a good guesser.
You're not going to age, a fresh Czech Pilsner. You're just not going to do that, right? Why would you?
Although I do have a couple of my cellar that have been there for a couple of years that we dragged out, so...
But, will it be bad? Maybe not. Will it be different? Certainly. With mead, I'm going to say I kind of agree with you the same way. Your higher ABV, your richer, more depth of flavor meads will age well. Short meads, as we discussed in Mead 101 show, the lower alcohol, the fresher meads. And I would imagine fruited meads and things of that nature, your Pimets and your Melomels and things of that nature, could be more susceptible to change with that added element of the fruit in them. So,
now, I mean, you guys talk about high alcohol, high sugar, and all that kind of good stuff, but you also have guys out there like myself. I mean, Russian Imperial Stouts. People say, "Hey, age this for 5-6 years." You have 14% alcohol, the bricks and the sugar. Yeah, it ages great. But you have people saying that the higher the sugar or higher the alcohol, the less it's going to change. So where's a good platform when it comes to aging meads? Do we do 5 years, 10 years, 12 years?
I knowing what I know about these products, I would say they don't age. I don't think they bottle condition or get better with time. That would be my guess.
Oh, no, they do. In fact...
That's 0 for 2 if you folks keep me track.
to give you an example, one of the meads that I've made a number of times is a kind of a winter spiced mead. It's got a little bit of clove, nutmeg, cinnamon.
As much as you said you hated clove earlier.
Hey, I want one clove.
One clove.
One clove in a 5-gallon batch. And some citrus zest and things like that. It's actually a very simple mead recipe, very popular when a lot of people make it as their first mead. But I have made batches of that and entered it in competition and entered it in consecutive years. In other words, I've entered it in the same competition when it was 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old. And I started winning medals with it at about 3 years old. And it took best of show in a competition at 5 years old. So I do age a lot of my meads. But again, like going back to that alcohol strength and things of that nature, most of those that I make are typically, I make some pretty high alcohol meads.
I was about to say,
minor 13, 14%. Oh, okay. Yeah, 13, 14, 15% or more. And then I do a lot of blending. So I will make a dry mead that's maybe only 10%, and I might blend it with a sweeter mead that's a little bit higher alcohol.
Well, I learned something new today that I can't not BS my way through this. And that I can age mead as well. Well, a good quick discussion here on our show to get going. We're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back with more, and we will talk about the meads that we are going to review for today. Be right back. and welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes Masterpiece Mead Theater today as we're discussing meads on this episode that is so riveting, full of fake British accents and pan flute music. Thanks for coming back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. We are talking about meads, and we're going to get to those right now. We have, again, three meads that we're going to talk about today. The first one is Bee Nectar, Miel de Garde, and the second one is also from Bee Nectar, called Episode 13. We're going to round out the discussion with a mead from Schramm's called The Statement as well. So let's get right to it. The first mead we're going to talk about is Miel de Garde from Bee Nectar. So Bee Nectar is based in Ferndale, Michigan. This particular, the Miel de Garde, has an ABV of 14%. Distribution for Bee Nectar is, it's becoming more pervasive. It's still usually focused around three states, but we talked a little bit about distribution issues, you know, with Mead and our Mead 101 show. So we definitely encourage you to go back and check that out. A very riveting discussion, but you can probably find this mail order if you're really interested in probably finding this as well. May not be at your local liquor store is what I'm saying. The description on this, it's a traditional mead made with orange blossom honey, aged for about 18 months in oak barrels. See, there you go, right off the bat. It was aged. Aged in the oak barrel, not aged in my cellar, but anyway. For the first release of our Miel de Garde line, we used the highest quality orange blossom honey available, then aged it in a natural American oak barrel for 18 months. The result is bright, aromatic, decadent mead made for sipping, and you would serve this at cellar temperature as well. So, Prior Shea, what do you think about Miel de Garde here from Bee Nectar?
It's probably one of my favorites. I always go back to the whole Sauternes. These honeys and meads that I've tried so far from these guys have been fantastic. You know, this one has huge legs on it. It's pale yellow in nature, and you know, it being with neutral American oak, and it has a huge orange, burnt orange flavor to it. Great spice, and you know, levels out really well.
What's your suds rating on this?
I would go 3.
A 3. Ah, what a relief. Monk Jason, what do you think about Miel de Garde from Bee Nectar?
Yeah, I would agree. This one, as we talked about earlier, that orange blossom honey that they used carries through quite well. You get that aromatic fruit and citrus character in the finished product. A little bit of alcohol heat, not too bad, and it's got that spicy character. That spicy character was really about the only thing I got in terms of the oak aging. That's probably where some of that came from. I didn't get a lot of other oak character. They said neutral oak, so you know, maybe it didn't impart a lot. This is a strong example. I gave it a suds rating of 3 on this one.
A 3 as well. What a relief. My tasting notes on Miel de Garde from Bee Nectar. You know, I wrote down that it had a light, honey-forward presentation. It had kind of a little bit of a dry finish off this. As opposed to, you know, some of the other ones that I've had, it's just, that was one of the things that kind of caught my attention. I'm just taking another sip there. Kind of check that out as well. Jason's probably checking me up going, no, not really, Mike. Anyway.
No, it does. You're not far off the mark.
Something that, not maybe like a full dry finish, but it's definitely not finishing sweet or neutral. How about that?
Yeah.
My suds rating for Miel de Garde is also a 3 as well. what a relief. So, our next mead is going to be, which he's already over here. He's so excited about this. Do you want to introduce this since you're such a fanatic about it?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, those who have been waiting for the movie, we're going to bring it to you a little bit earlier. The Death Star has came back.
Oh, yeah.
So here we are with the Bee Nectar episode 13. It's got a big thickness to it. Me and Jason were talking about that it had a strong vanilla, toasted nut flavor, golden raisins, long finish. And this is actually one that I think can actually last for a lot longer than just 4 or 5 years. Medium thickness, and man, this thing is, thing's rocking. I'll go with a 4 on it.
A 4, huh? How about that? A body should not make that sound. Jason, what do you think about episode 13 from Bee Nectar?
I also really enjoyed this one. I got that roasted or toasted nut. I almost said peanut at first. Maybe Shay mentioned cashew, maybe a little more appropriate. But that came present in the aroma to me, and really pleasant in the aroma. The only place I can think of that that would have come from would have been the honey itself. So it's probably a pretty rich, flavorful honey that they used in this. This one retains a decent bit of the honey character, the sweetness of the honey. And I was really surprised at how well they kept the alcohol in check, with this being at 17.5% alcohol. Ooh. This is much smoother than even some of the 14 and 15% alcohol meads that we have tried previously. So I really enjoyed this one. Gave it a suds rating of 4.
Wow, how about that? A body should not make that sound. My tasting notes on episode 13 are... I wrote down... before I go through my tasting notes, when I tend to think about enjoying a cigar, it has three stages. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And a lot of times when I'm consuming other drinks, it's the way it presents itself, it's the way it hangs on your palate, and the way that it finishes, you know, as well. And I think that was, I really felt all three stages, you know, in this particular mead. I thought it had a bitter start to it. I thought that it had kind of a blooming, sweet middle to it, and it just kind of tailed off at the end in a pleasant way. I actually did not pick up on the nuttiness until you guys mentioned it, and I agree. There's something there. A cashew, I think, is very close. It's halfway between like a pecan or a cashew, or maybe even a blend of the two, you know, kind of. There's some type of, it's something is creating that bitterness.
It's, you know, a creamy nuttiness. Well.
Yeah, that's it. Almost if you add like a cashew peanut butter, that maybe that's the right way of thinking about it.
Well, cashews as a whole are creamy, bigger. It's the...
Yeah, there's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my suds rating for episode 13, Bee Nectar, is a 3. Ah, what a relief. Well, I think the thing that was missing from this particular mead are good, you know, impressions of Star Wars characters. So here's my test to you. You have to talk, how would you describe mead in your favorite Star Wars character? You got some good ones to pick from here. So I'll go first, because I at least had more than a minute to think about it, okay? Luke, this is your mead calling you. The honey is so sweet for you. You enjoy the mead, Luke. Yep, what's your rating on that?
2.
Yeah, I didn't know.
That was pretty bad.
Pick the only character in the movie that had a memorable name. We could go with Chewbacca, but nobody would understand what we were
Chewbacca,
talking about.
You got Yoda,
We could do R2-D2, but I don't make those kind of noises.
No. All right, who's next? Look at you. You guys are looking at each other like, this is not happening, Mike. No. I have not had enough mead to be able to have my favorite Star Wars character.
I'm not drinking this stuff out of a sheep's horn yet, so... And Jason's pants are still on from the moonshine episode.
Yes, I've not removed my pants yet, so.
Oh, well, but there is hope.
Pour some sugar.
Yeah, I agree. That's what we need. Thinks that if we were going to have, I can't even do Yoda. That's just so bad. I started down that path. It's an epic fail. Anyway, all right.
Not enough side taste. Sweetness there is.
There you go. I knew he would channel it eventually. It just took another swig of shrimps to get you there, right, Jason?
Yep, that's it. That's it.
It's like being stuck in a mini mart with Yoda.
Well, you know, you could. You know, we're going to have an episode pretty soon where we're going to be sucking down helium.
Oh, so, that's going to be good.
Yeah, so we're going to have alcohol and helium and microphones combined with the same event.
All right.
Look at you guys. You're like, for those who are keeping this.
We're going to be doing whippets, smoking cigars, and drinking alcohol.
So you're saying the one of the key things that's missing from that episode is a stripper pole?
Right. We need the stripper anthem.
We already have the stripper.
I know, but
to be our new co-host, you know, audition. You know, what would you do if
you can't heard play that song enough?
I don't think so.
I mean, for a one-armed drummer, he was great. And you can't play enough. I mean, that's why they play it in every strip club in the nation, because it never gets old.
Well, we've had a good time talking about two meads so far. We have one more to cover. We're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back. We'll cover our last mead. To Masterpiece Mead Theater here on Sips, Suds, and Smokes, the home of fake British accents, really bad pan flute music, and horrible Yoda impressions.
I feel like you're going to be hitting people with a ruler after that accent.
You know, no, not really, but I'm quite...
Once again.
We're absolutely going to be banned from something somehow. Welcome back to Sips, Suds, and Smokes. You've come back to a show that we have on mead today, and we've covered two meads that we're talking about. We have one more to talk about, and hopefully there are more impressions with Star Wars characters involved.
Or Vikings.
Unless you get a call from George Lucas anytime soon.
Are you saying that... Your tasting notes would get better if you were drinking mead from a sheep horn?
I mean, how many movies have you seen where they're drinking mead and they don't drink it out of a sheep's horn?
I agree. It's well, and
you see it spill them on. They spill it on themselves, well, and they're drinking it in debauchery. And the prior or monk is drunk.
There's a lot more facial hair involved usually as well.
That's true.
Yeah,
you gotta have the
big bushy beard, you know, in order to, you know, pull that off.
There is an embarrassing lack of facial hair at this table.
I'm the only one with gray in their beard.
Mine's camouflage.
it's somebody who's fair skinned, and then you have somebody who's got mostly gray on their face.
Correct, that's for sure. But, you know, the thing that I always find funny about Viking movies is they're always talking with Russian dialects. Like, you know, like
there's never been a Russian Viking since they're landlocked, for the most part.
Well, Sean Connery would be able to play a Viking. I mean, he has a Scot that's played a Russian, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Hunt for Red October.
Right. So why couldn't he play a good Viking as well?
I don't know. That's a good one. He'd be the most well-dressed Viking there.
I agree. He would be not only the best dressed, but he would be able to fake it really well.
Yeah. No, he's... I wouldn't say he's my favorite Bond, but I mean, he's been up there.
His Yoda impressions would not suck.
Gee, thanks.
For any listener who knows Sean Connery and can get in contact with us, that'd be great. Because we have a Yoda spot for him here. But we'd give him plenty of free scotch. He'll be fine. And cigars.
Well, we have one more weed. We have one more mead to talk about today.
This is not that type of show.
It's not. Not yet, anyway.
We're not based in Colorado.
Well, but we're going to be banned from somewhere soon. We have our last mead today is from Schramm's. It is called The Statement. This has an ABV of 14%. Schramm's is also based in Ferndale, Michigan. And... this is very different than the other meads
that we've had.
Yeah. So here's the description from Schramm's itself. Kim Schramm's, the statement, is a result of 20 years of growing Michigan tart cherries and nearly a dozen test batches. Living up to its name, the Melomel's expression of genuine cherry flavor truly makes a statement. The delicate balance of sweet honey and tart cherries makes the statement a neutral complement to cherry and sharp cheese, chocolate and sharp cheese. Its anticipated maturity is actually 5 years, so this is one that they actually target to seller as well. So, again, the distribution on Schramm's, very small, actually even smaller than Bee Nectar, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean... like I was telling them, this is the first time I've actually even seen a bottle of this stuff. This is about as close as to wine as it gets. For me, it is. You know, it's got the color of Merlot, tastes like Chianti, dark cherries, you know, this beautiful representation of what it is. And, you know, Melomel's that we've learned is the fruit inside of meads, correct, Jason?
Yes, Melomel.
Mm-hmm. So it's a drier, semi-sweet, medium to full body. You get a slight dark currant flavor to it. But, you know, it's made with tart Michigan cherries, a little bit of orange spice, maybe a little bit of an oriental allspice. But, I mean, this is fantastic.
What's your sedge rating?
I'd do 4 on this.
4. Nobody should not make that sound. Monk Jason, what do you think about the statement from Schramm's?
Well, I agree. It's very cherry forward. You get that deep cherry aroma. You get it in the taste. I was pleasantly surprised with the aroma. I also got some brighter berry, almost berry-like components in the aroma as well. But the flavor is all that deep, rich cherry flavor. For me personally, this one, the cherry might override the flavor character of the honey. The sweetness of the honey is there, and it balances well with the tart component of the cherries. But I think maybe it's just slightly. When I think of meads and Melomel's, it's a balance. It's a balance between the added component and the honey itself. And like ciders, you never want to override the core component, that core honey, or in a cider, the apple. You never want to override that with the fruit that you've added to it. Mm. And I think in this one, the only nick or knock I have on this is that I think the cherry might slightly override the honey. The honey is, like I said, it's there to balance the tart character of the cherry. But so that's the one thing that knocks it from a 4 to a 3 for me. So my suds rating on this one's a 3. I did enjoy it, but
a 3. Ah, what a relief. So my tasting notes on Schramm's, the statement. You know, the one thing that I wrote down was it was fruit forward. And I completely agree with, you know, your statement, Jason, is the you know, the complement between the fruit and the honey is a bit off balance here. But at the same time, the thing I wrote down is this tastes like black cherries candied. It's very pleasant. And I think to really probably enjoy more than a half glass of this, you know, that would be pretty tough for me. I wrote down, this is the perfect port alternative. I think that if somebody really had an affinity towards ruby ports, and for whatever reason they just, you know, either couldn't get a hold of a great ruby port, or they were really looking for some alternate, man, I love this. For a port head, you know, like myself, this was a really great mead. I really enjoyed it. But I really agree with it. Just a little bit too much fruit, you know, right up front, but not to the point that it's so off-putting. It's just something that, you know, kind of captured your attention rather quickly. Mm-hmm. Definitely on the nose. Oh my God, the first time this went, I was within even like 4 inches of it, I could smell it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, hey, hello, Mr. Black Cherry. I definitely got that. Really great mead. It was one of my favorite out of the flight as well. I give this a 4. A body should not make that sound. Well, really great flight all around. And all of these were very different. Again, a very broad range, you know, flight. So, if you guys had to go back to one of these three, which one would you go to? Even though all of our tasting cups are empty again.
I definitely go back to the episode 13. Hmm. That one was, I think the standout for me.
You want to channel Chewbacca, right?
I do want to channel Chewbacca. I would need more of this. Probably 2 to 2.5 bottles, I think I could channel Chewbacca.
That's actually the sound you would make if you finished 2.5 bottles of this.
Oh, okay.
From the floor.
Yeah.
You would make that sound from the floor of the bathroom.
I would say that there are probably some, you know, diehard Star Wars, fans that they're so worried about what J.J. Abrams is going to do with that franchise, they'd rather drink the mead than actually see the movie. You know, they're like, oh, my God, what is it going to be?
Well, they had, what's his face? Kevin from Silent Bob. The guy apparently from Silent Bob and
Jay
Clerks. And yeah, Jay and the Client, Silent Bob. So they had him, I guess Spielberg asked him out to see a rendition or a clip of
a daily.
Yeah. And apparently it made him cry because he was such a huge Star Wars fan that he was so moved by the rendition that they actually posted a picture on Instagram and Twitter of him crying after he'd seen it.
Oh my goodness.
So
one of the principal characters has got to die. That's it.
That's going to be awesome.
Yep.
For all you Star Wars people, I don't know who it's going to be.
Well, it's not going to be R2-D2.
Yeah, no, he's lived a little bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah, he just he has moments of reincarnation. They just keep on wiping his memory. He has no idea where he's at.
See, I don't know how is this going to be an after the last one, or which episode is this?
After you get to the second bottle of mead and you finish it, you'll figure it out.
Because I have no idea. I mean, because there was one person who was telling me that there was there's books that, you know, talk that was written for all the Star Wars people. I won't call y'all geeks, but
raise Trekkies. Your hand. Yeah, not Trekkies.
They're not. Don't call them Trekkies.
No.
You'll get hate mail.
I will. I already have. I'm sorry.
Aficionados.
Those who are aficionados read these are just books where it has Princess Leia and Han Solo already have grandchildren, and so it'll be interesting to see who the main characters die.
Well, let's wrap things up for today on our show. Well, thanks to all our listeners on Sip, Suds, and Smokes. You can catch all of our episodes online on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, YouTube, Uncle John's Basement, and Spreaker, our native media host. Our terrestrial radio stations are always wondering, you know, I think that I could probably do a better Darth Vader impression than those guys on the radio show. Anyway, listen, send them a mask from Star Wars, as well as a bottle of that Shrams, and tell them you want to hear the show. on your favorite radio station. Send them a note and copy us as well. You can reach us online anytime. info@sipssudsandsmokes.com is our email address. Our daily tasting notes are on Twitter every day @SipSudSmokes. Our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. Sip Suds and Smokes is sponsored by Craft Beer Kings. Craft Beer Kings, the home for all your beer, wine, and mead needs. It's home of the mystery box. You can check them out online, www.craftbeerkings.com. Listen, do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. I want to thank my co-host for being here, Prior Shea.
Everybody drink well.
And Monk Jason.
Thank you for having me and reminding everyone to kick back and taste something tasty today.
Absolutely. This is Good Old Boy Mike asking you to join us once again and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip Suds and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see you all next time.